Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Developing right now as they're back, talking about the Senate, including our own senators here in Pennsylvania, as far as Senator Dave McCormick on the right, and on the left, John Fetterman. They're among the senators back returning to D.C., and they'll take up the issue of President Donald J. Trump's tax and immigration package. That's number one on the agenda. Republicans want to send one big, beautiful bill, and that is technically what it's known as. It's labeled the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, so that's the technical name for it. President Trump wants it on his desk before July 4th, but what will happen? What will transpire, especially we talked a lot about four GOP senators, including Senator Rand Paul, raising concerns about raising the debt ceiling. We'll talk about that moving forward. You'll hear from, for example, Scott Bessent and others. But this passed the House last month, including its cuts, as the mainstream media so-called keep on putting in the headlines, cuts to Medicaid funding. I will point out to you that they have repeatedly said, as far as the Trump administration, nobody is cutting Medicaid to those who deserve it. They're cutting fraud. That's what they're cutting. But President Trump, also on the docket, plans to have lunch today with his vice president, J.D. Vance. And so we don't have any, quote unquote, advertised public events. Also, I will tell you that today, as we see the Trump administration claiming that Chinese students, quote, exploit U.S. universities. So this is the State Department. I talked about it earlier this morning in one of our news headlines, but the State Department is pledging to revoke a record number of Chinese student visas. And so this is getting a lot of reaction, of course, from colleges, universities, particularly in the Ivies, the Ivy League. And so the number that we have, 277,000 Chinese students on U.S. campuses. Now, the word from the State Department, as well as Secretary Rubio, as well as the Trump administration, is that they want to be able to vet anybody coming into this country on a visa, even a student visa. But yes, because they're not allowed to vet them, they're saying, fine, then we will block the visas from going forth. So we're following that one for you for sure. We got it all. But let's just take a look back, because when we last met, and I hope you had a wonderful weekend, on Friday, we were talking about the fact that President Trump, first of all, was to hold that wonderful news conference, 1:30 in the afternoon, celebrating the 130 days of Elon Musk and Doge. And so he gave him a golden key to the White House. We had that big ceremony that happened Friday afternoon. And then Friday evening, President Trump was right here in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh area, and really taking that victory lap, celebrating U.S. Steel. What's going on with that? I don't see a lot of headlines talking about the deal. That must mean it's a good thing. But I do want to look back and take a bit of a victory lap, if we could, with President Trump. He was in Pennsylvania with our own Senator Dave McCormick. They were at a big rally being celebrated by all of those union workers, celebrating manufacturing, keeping the jobs, creating those manufacturing jobs, right? Keeping them right here in Pennsylvania. A great day to celebrate. So we have a lot to go through, but we do want to hear from Trump as he was celebrating here in Pennsylvania. Listen in.
But companies all over the world have announced nearly $10 billion in new investments in steel, just in steel alone. But the Nippon investment we're announcing today blows them all away with a record setting. And this was just heard of. We just came out a little while ago. $14 billion commitment to the future of this company. That is the single largest investment. That's the single largest investment of any kind in any industry. So not only steel, go all the way back. You go into fracking. You go into anything you want to go into, because you're a good fracking state, too. We love fracking, by the way. But think of this. Think of this. The largest investment of any kind in the history of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. and we also will be the largest investment in the history of American steel industry. There's never been a $14 billion investment in the history of the steel industry in the United States of America.
And so in this one, isn't this a good thing? Shouldn't we be celebrating this here in Pennsylvania? You would think that it's a lead story. So I'll just ask you, locally, when you see or hear your local news, you look at the Philadelphia Inquirer, no doubt this is front page, this is a headline. Not so much. They were flanked, President Trump in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania, flanked by that sea of steel workers. And I imagine some of them are Flyers fans, but they're all wearing the orange safety jackets and the hard hats. And President Trump had that standing ovation. I mean, this was a hero's welcome at the Mon Valley Irvin Works, marking the signing of this deal between U.S. Steel and Nippon. I always thought it was Nippon. I don't know. Steel, it's a big deal. And the largest investment in state history. That's the truth. And I would think this would be huge news. Isn't this positive? Can't we all agree? And yet, crickets. You don't really hear this from the so-called mainstream media. Wonder why. But it's the deal would have the Japanese company purchasing U.S. Steel, drawing bipartisan support across Pennsylvania from Pittsburgh native Senator Dave McCormick, as I've said, to Senator John Fetterman. They're applauding it. And I believe that as well, Governor Josh Shapiro thinks it's a good thing too, right? And yet, it's not really in the headlines. So, and former President Joe Biden, by the way, he pretty much blocked the deal on national security grounds shortly before he left office. And so they're saying a $14 billion deal in capital investment, good for America, good for jobs, and certainly good for this administration, for all of us. I always just want to point the bias by omission as you look at what's going on, because this is incredible when we think about the economy. As President Trump said, we're going to produce our own metal, make our own energy, secure our own future, and build our country, control our own destiny. Isn't that a good thing? And yet, when you look at the headlines, and I just wanted to point this out to you so you have this talking point. When you look at the headline, what do you see? Oh, Trump says he's doubling steel tariffs to 50%. What does that mean? Yes, what it means is he plans to double tariffs on who? On what? In other words, what he's doing is he's promoting metals made here so that we have the advantage. And he's saying that anybody who doesn't produce it here, coming from a foreign entity where they're charging us double or triple, we want a fair deal. So that negotiation continues.
With the help of patriots like you, we're going to produce our own metal, unleash our own energy, secure our own future, build our country, control our destiny. And we are once again going to put Pennsylvania steel into the backbone of America like never before. The golden age of America has only just begun. And together, we are going to make America great again, greater than ever before. Thank you very much, Pennsylvania.
And thank you, President Trump. Thank you, Mr. President. We really appreciate it. Not enough of us say thank you, right? I know we do. We say thank you. There's another piece of this and another person who deserves a victory lap. And this was a great moment when, you know, they were taking the podium, for example, big blue sign that said American Steel, all the workers there in the mostly white or orange hard hats, the orange safety vests. But they were speaking out, talking about the fact that Senator McCormick was critical. Can we go to this one, Dan, as well?
U.S. Senator Dave McCormick. I met the senator at a Trump rally in Latrobe before we were both getting ready to speak. He introduced himself to me and asked about the Nippon merger and what I thought about it. Well, as you know, I'm pretty passionate about it, and let him know that. He told me, after I win, you will be my first meeting. I was his first meeting. He kept his promise. He asked all the tough questions during the meeting, and he asked all and he gathered the facts. We met again last week to touch base, and he took it from there. Without his help, this partnership doesn't get done. Thank you, Senator, from the bottom of my heart.
So he deserves a shout out. President Trump, like I say, speaking at U.S. Steel's Mon Valley Works, that's a steel plant. And so the U.S., by the way, looking at the stats on this real quick, the world's largest steel importer, excluding the European Union, with a total of million tons, of imported steel just last year. This is according to the Department of Commerce. So the new tariffs that Trump is saying would go from 25% to 50%. When he says new tariffs, they would increase steel prices across the board, hitting industry and consumers alike. But what he's talking about is not made here in the USA, obviously. And so he's trying to negotiate with the EU and others around the world to say, give us a better deal. Stop charging us double and triple. I don't know who's against that one. 855-839-1210 is the number to call. Just wanted to point that out to you because I think we don't take these moments enough to celebrate what Trump did on a Friday or on last week on a Thursday. Your head is spinning to think about how hard they're working each and every day. And speaking of that, I know that everybody was talking about Elon Musk and his prescription medications or whatever, but can we just say thank you to Elon Musk? As he did an incredible job. Now he goes back to work, to his, you know, day job. I know that the
you
vice
see that video he posted, or Trump posted about Elon?
Yeah, let's see it.
You want to see it?
Here, yeah.
You go.
Musk has given me his complete and total endorsement. I will create a government efficiency commission tasked with conducting a complete financial and performance audit of the entire federal government and making recommendations for drastic reforms. As the first order of business, this commission will develop an action plan to totally eliminate fraud and improper payments within 6 months.
This is an order creating and implementing the Department of Governmental Efficiency, known as DOGE.
That's a big one.
I have created the brand new Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. Perhaps you've heard of it. By slashing all of the fraud, waste, and theft we can find, we will defeat inflation, bring down mortgage rates, lower car payments and grocery prices, protect our seniors, and put more money in the pockets of American families.
That is going to do more to unleash innovation, to unleash economic prosperity, when you don't have this crushing bureaucracy that answers to nobody sitting on top of the American people.
Well, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in money that's going to places where it shouldn't be going. I ran on this, and the people want me to find it. And I've had a great help with Elon Musk, who's been terrific.
We are going line by line. When it comes,
thank you, Elon, putting out that thank you and see all the different shots. Just want to take you back, because the time has flown, but I want to take you back when President Trump came back, returned to Butler, Pennsylvania, July 13th, a year after that assassination attempt. And I want you to think about who was there. And he was so adorable. And he said, like, I'm Dark MAGA. And do you have this, Dan? I think I sent it to you last night. Maybe not. All right, we'll play it moving forward. But just thinking about Elon Musk and what he did when he stood on that stage here in Pennsylvania and brought forth, and now we know from the progressive groups who've spent all this money figuring out. Okay, let's listen in, just to remind you.
As you can see, I'm not just MAGA, I'm Dark MAGA.
He's so adorable. Remember that? And he was really bringing in those maybe independent voters, young men between 18 to 29. I know for my sons, they said, Mom, can we meet Elon? You know, a lot of people who maybe didn't get Trump or weren't political, don't consider themselves conservatives or Republicans. But when Elon Musk came into the equation, he brought a new element. And so that was, I think, a game changer in the campaign. The addition of Elon Musk here in Pennsylvania and then campaigning across the country with President Trump, and as they really forged this new friendship.
And I also want to tell you, he made that black hat so we're selling.
Remember?
So what happened? I didn't even know we had it. It's selling like hotcakes. 10,000 hats were sold like in the last day and a half. But listen, more importantly, he calls it Dark MAGA.
Dark MAGA. Because Elon Musk made it cool. He made it cool to be a conservative guy. Or
I said, that's the coolest name.
Right?
That's the coolest name I've had. And he likes it. He's wearing it all the time now.
So what did President Trump, I haven't heard anybody make this comparison, what did President Trump give as a gift? Because Friday, I asked you the question, I knew that Trump would, our president, would give Elon Musk a gift. I said on Friday, my goodness, what did I do to deserve a beautiful big silver platter? Ding! You know I was going to rub that in. So when I met the president, thanks to Rich Scioli and Greg Stocker, and we were there in the Oval during the first Trump presidency, I still display proudly my Trump platter. And so what did he give Elon Musk? A beautiful golden key that he presented as a gift, a key to the White House. And if you saw it, if you watched it, and of course, Larry, my husband Larry and I, we were out and about running errands. I said, you have to get back in time. And he said, oh my God, Dawn, we can listen. No. I want to see it on the big screen. He's like, oh my God. But we did. We rushed back because I wanted to see it. And there, and you actually, if you saw it on the, like I saw it on my big screen TV, which is where I wanted to watch. If you saw Elon Musk's face when President Trump thanked him for his Doge efforts and all of his works, it really exposing the fleecing of America, of our tax dollars, exposing fraud.
YouTube alert.
Right?
A little special something we have here.
Look at his face.
A very special, that I give to very special people. I have given it to some, but it goes to very special people, and I thought I'd give it to Elon as a presentation from our country.
Golden.
Thank you, Elon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Look at his face. He literally blushes in such a humble way. And I thought to myself, and I haven't heard anybody say this, but I looked back, when did Ben Franklin take, and I believe it was in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, right, in our region right here, Benjamin Franklin took a kite out during a storm and to see if a key attached to a string would draw an electrical charge. That's the story. Now, some historians question whether or not that's really what happened, as Benjamin Franklin in his famous experiment, did it really, they have questioned, did that really take place? And who was he with? His son. And I thought to myself, I couldn't help but think it was symbolic to me that President Trump not only gave him that beautiful golden key to the White House, but it harkens back to June 10th, 1752, the image of a key with Ben Franklin. Because he's somebody known as a founding father, somebody who fought for the freedom, right? The Constitution, all of that. But as well, somebody who was a great inventor and somebody known for, yes, you think of Ben Franklin and his realization that he was pushing for our Constitution, the Revolution, he was a revolutionary. And what also did he fight for? Freedom of the press. And so this really brings me back to June 10th, 1752, so many years ago. And thank you, Dan Borowski, with the key. I don't know if it was a golden key, but I just wanted to wrap that up for you. Ben Franklin from June 10th of 1752, as we think about our great revolutionaries and the key that represents and symbolizes the revolutionaries throughout our nation. I couldn't help but think of all of that. Elon Musk, thank you. President Trump, thank you. Want to give them a thank you. And maybe, I don't know, will any of us ever deserve a golden key next time we go to the Oval Office?
Are you implying something?
We can only dream.
Well, you got a platter, Dawn. I mean, come on.
I know. I'm a woman. I always want more. Hello? No, if anybody's deserved it, I would say maybe, look at that key. I covet that key. Look at that. And look at it. Look at his little face. Look at him. He's just blushing. If you're watching on YouTube, he's so adorable. But by this point, my husband, Larry, as I was watching this live, I should have just done like my own live little thing. Like, but I was like, look at him, Lair Bear, look at him. And he's like, oh my, I'm out. Gotta take the victory lap, you know? Nobody's going to celebrate him. We got to, don't they deserve a celebration, or are you nauseous as well?
I'm a little tired of him. With the whole showing up with the black eye and the...
I know, because this little boy...
I think we're over this chapter, Dawn. I'm ready to move on.
Are you guys ready to move on? 855-839-1210. I felt like it deserved some level of a victory lap because they're moving seriously at such a record pace. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, there it is. Thank you, Elon. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah.
I'm done. Victory lap.
You want a key?
I want
Can we get
key.
You a key to Philadelphia?
I want a gold key.
Do you not have a key to Philadelphia already?
I don't have a key.
Really?
No.
How does Dawn Stensland not have a key to Philadelphia?
Right?
Do you have a key to the Mummers Parade?
I know. We should have a key.
Right?
Or at least a feather.
Yeah.
Maybe a feather left over on the street when they clean it up.
Yes.
855-839-1210. Your thoughts. But I was just looking at that key, and at first I thought, oh, it harkens back to Ben Franklin, Bucks County, Pennsylvania, some similar chapters, if you will.
As we play Lightning Crash by Live in the background.
Thank you for that. We're jamming. 855-839-1210. 1210 is the number to call. We're going to show you these adorable, I'm going to call them the Fauci puppies. They survived Fauci.
I can't take it, Dawn.
I know.
I got to get someone in here to play this video instead of me because I was pulling it and I was tearing up. These things are so darn cute.
You're going to see them take their first steps on the grass. The freed puppies. The freed Fauci puppies.
I'm just a very wealthy doctor. I had nothing to do with the puppies. Remember him?
Wow, we have a Fauci impression.
I know. Jimmy Kelly's off today, but he's probably proud of me.
Channel him.
We'll take a quick break. Thanks for being here this Monday. We'll be right back.
The Dawn Stensland Show. Dawn Stensland live and local on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Free Odyssey app.
So, you know, Dan Borowski, his wife Maisie, what we have in common, we all are animal lovers, we're dog lovers. Remember, we're going to be at this great event. Please come out to Chester County, the Piazza Mercedes there out on Westchester Pike. We're going to have this great event. We're going to be there all morning, 6 a.m. to noon with Kale and Company. So come on out. Either bring your rescue dog or cat. Or a picture, even in your phone. But come on out. See, we're going to have food and donuts. We're going to have a great time because we love animals. But I always believe that for rescue animals, there's something special, whether it's a doggie or a kitty cat. They know that you saved them. And there's just something special about that. And that's why when I saw this video of these, 30 beagles, these adorable animals that were held in these so-called, NIH labs under the direction of
Dr. Anthony Fauci, under the NIH. And they spent all this money for all these years experimenting, basically torturing these little beagles.
And do you know why they chose beagles? And I did not know all this information because these dogs are among the kindest, sweetest animals. And that's why they were subjected to basically torture. It's really sickening. So they did this event where these animals were raised, these dogs, from puppyhood in cages. And they were never, apparently, the story goes, they were never let out to go out in a yard or on grass. And if you're watching us on YouTube, you see this as they're freeing these animals, which all of these animals are being adopted. They're up for adoption. It's pretty amazing as they sort of, step out so hesitantly. These are animals that have been subjected to IVs and needles.
Oh,
these are the survivors.
And their puppy dog guys are so adorable. I just want to put it out there again. YouTube.com/@1210WPHT. Please go watch this, like, subscribe, click the bell for notifications as well.
So these sweet animals, and I'm being serious, they were, and remember we aired the story for you on Greg Stocker's cut sheet, on Dan Borowski's cut sheet, that this was discovered. The PETA people and all of the different animal rights people said, please don't do this. Well, under the Trump administration, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, Marty McCary and others, they said, this is wrong. We can do other experiments. We don't need to even do these experiments on live animals, any animals, let alone these beagles. So if you can show this.
All right, there it is. All 30. About to come outside for the first time.
So you see them in the doggy cages. They're small, sort of those, you know, transport. They're wagging their little tails. And they have them in little pink scarves and blue scarves. And look.
Caption said they've never walked on grass until today.
First time. So you see them stepping out. What's it?
It's you.
And they sort of lift up their paws. What's this? And they're wagging their and then you see them realizing we're free. Oh, Kelly, look, we're being free.
You got to bring my dog into it. Huh?
Oh my gosh!
Already tons emotional and watching this. And oh my gosh!
Little barks.
YouTube.com/@12WPH. This is beautiful to see.
This is freedom. And you see them. They've never had the cage door open, so the cage door's open. They step out in the grass. They're smelling.
Look
and
at
then within
one.
A few
got
minutes,
the zoomies.
Yeah, they're just sort of now. They're like. Sort of pouncing on the grass and jumping around, and the look of elation on their little faces, their big eyes, and now they start playing and wagging their tails. And
they don't have a fence up either, and they're just there's a fence. Okay, good.
Yeah, well, President Trump brought us freedom. Larry, my husband, if Larry's listening, he's like, oh, here she goes. But seriously, it's really sweet that, and we heard these rumblings. It was, media reports. And I will say those different animal advocates were saying, and people in the medical fields were saying, you do not need to do these experiments on dogs, on any dogs, on any animals. You can do other things with the technology. And so it was really a beautiful sight. These adorable doggies, and they'll find homes and get to play on the grass. Very, just a wonderful story. Speaking of piazzas, we celebrate with Piazza, and we're bringing back the Piazza pets. If you remember this, when I first came to the station, it was actually 10 years ago, we did segments with the Piazza pets, and that's really part of what we're bringing back. So come on out, celebrate us, celebrate Piazza, celebrate adopting animals, and maybe you'll even find a forever home for a Piazza pet.
Free speech lives here on Odyssey's number one talk station, Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Let the dogs out!
So we put forward a policy to replace animals in research with other technological advances, AI and other tools that actually translate better to human health. We got rid of all the beagle experiments on the NIH campus. It's sort of like people just don't trust the NIH anymore.
Yeah, so thank you, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, and thank you to you guys on the YouTube chat, Newman Price and Tracy and Suze, loves Jeffy and Gala, Lisa, you guys all said, hey, Trump let the dogs out. So thank you, Dan, for putting that little piece together. Trump, free the dogs. I love it. Hey, speaking of freeing, I don't know if you freed the toddler. I don't know if you heard this story. This is crazy. I have so many stories when my sons were little, and they're like, where are they running? Down the Jersey Shore, at the airport, at the market. But this one, I don't have a story like this. Maybe Greg Stocker with his little guy.
What are you,
I don't know.
There?
But imagine you're at the airport and you're like, because when when your kid is like 2-3 years old, they're so fast. They take off if you have other kids too. In this case, this is unbelievable. This is a toddler causing this stir at, this is Newark Liberty International Airport. The toddler, look at this on YouTube if you can see this. There's an all-out search because the little kid jumps onto the baggage conveyor belt at the ticketing desk. So out front at the ticketing desk, and everybody's searching for this child. This is dangerous. So you see the video. They release the video of this little one going underneath. Woohoo! As if it's like a slip and slide. But then they found him. There he was, two-year-old, ends up on the conveyor belt on a different floor. Went through the hole, right?
So I think that's another video of another instance.
Oh, it is? That's the 2019
And then here's the two-year-old. Sorry about that.
So here's this one. No, that's okay.
I screwed you up there.
Look at this kid in the orange. Oh, my gosh.
But didn't allow me.
The two-year-old going through the conveyor system, climbing over bags, passing inside an x-ray machine, and finally down a ramp into a large baggage screening room where TSA agents found him and called for help.
Crazy.
He suffered cuts to his arm and a fractured hand.
But he's okay. You know, they'll talk about that for the rest of the kid's life, but they're saying that this kid is lucky that he didn't fall off, hit his head, and so he was on... through the baggage room on the lower level. So they said that they found the kid. As you hear, he's perfectly fine now, recovering. I don't know. The mom and dad probably had a heart attack. Who was the other kid? That was another one that happened.
It's back in 2021.
Okay.
I'll see if I can find more on that.
Jeez.
So
TSA agents. So in all of these, you know, they've had these over the years. This one, I think, was the most extensive because it started at the desk. You know, where you check your bag in and then went all the way through as if Newark doesn't have enough problems. Unbelievable. By the way, they're saying we're expecting some beautiful sunsets and sunrises. Why? Because of these, once again, Canadian wildfires. So it threatens our air quality, and as well, though, it intensifies the sunsets, especially.
Ooh.
You notice a beautiful sunset.
Nice.
Unfortunately, more Canadian. It's that time of year again. And did any...
Wait, what about Canadians?
The wildfires.
Oh.
Why would you think I said?
No, they said something about Canadians being unfortunate. Didn't realize that. Sorry.
Did anybody see the Northern Lights?
I
want to hear from you. Supposedly, some people saw the Northern Lights, because we usually don't see them in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess some people did see him.
Maisie sent me out back yesterday to go see him or try to find him. Nothing. No.
Mm.
No. And what happens is sometimes if you can't see him with the naked eye, if you put up a camera with your video screen, like a video recorder,
mm-hmm.
You can see it through the like infrared video darkness something. I don't know what it is in iPhones. But
so you may get it's a powerful geomagnetic storm currently hitting Earth's atmosphere, and may lead to aurora displays known as the Northern Lights. So they're saying that we may be able to see them again tonight. Maybe. So let us know. Watch out. Last night it was around midnight. I woke up, went out to look. I couldn't see anything.
No?
Couldn't see it.
Does it concern you that we can see them?
No.
Okay.
It's just, you know, one of those things.
Yeah.
The K-Index forecast says we might be able to see them. Look to the northern horizon of the sky. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh.
That's the latest.
I feel like we're Art Bell right now, kind of, with this music, but...
I know. It's kind of cool.
Aurora Borealis, I like it. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. By the way, I know that everybody's talking locally. I know Montgomery County had a Montgomery County outside of Philadelphia here in Pennsylvania. Many communities have flag raisings, not of the American flag, but of the pride flag. I'll also point out to you, it's National PTSD Awareness Month. It's African American Music Appreciation. We have the Caribbean American Heritage Month, the month of June, and National Safety Month. It's also National Smile Month.
Hmm. That's a tough one for me, Dawn.
What?
National Smile Month.
You got to smile.
I know. That's hard.
Why?
Well, it's just, you know.
What?
I'm such a pessimist. It's tough to smile all the time.
So they never talk about the other, you know, the other, I don't know, celebrations.
No,
month-long
no.
celebrations. No. I'm just saying. So we'll talk about that one going on. We got a break. 855-839-1210. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being on the Odyssey app at Dawn Stensland on X and social media. And thank you to you right now watching on YouTube.
You want to go rave during the break with this music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do a little rave dance, a little Trump dance. Thanks for being here.
Follow Talk Radio 1210 on Instagram and Facebook at 1210 WPHT.
Something's changed in your eyes. I could see it when I walked through that door. Something's changed in your eyes.
You know what else June is the month of? It's dedicated to the most sacred heart of Jesus, encouraging all of us to be close to that heart, thinking about love, mercy, grace, salvation. So I'm just giving you an alt view of the month of June, which, you know, is also the month of Juneteenth, but it's also June is dedicated to the most sacred heart of Jesus, which brings me to two different pieces of audio that I want to bring to you. One is I want to think about Elon Musk as he talks about goodness, that it's important in hiring or getting to know people, working with people, and honoring people who have a good heart. And I think this is really important when you think about the old saying that you can't teach goodness. You know, I know that there was a time in our country when people would say, you know what, I want to hire some good people who are honest people, who are good people, and I can train them to do the job. But what I can't train is goodness. And that's really an important thing to celebrate when we think of the American worker, our work ethic, people who are honest on the job. You think about all the dishonesty. You think about all of the corruption, particularly within the swamp, not within regular working people, by the way. Those are the higher level people, the bureaucrats, the elected officials, some of them. But also what's going on with the fleecing of America, as I call it, the corruption that DOGE uncovered. And that's why they hate Elon Musk. They hate him because he exposed all of this government waste and corruption. We look forward to the day that DOJ certainly is, I believe, investigating some of this. But listen to Elon Musk as he talks about this. He talks about the importance of a good heart, a sincere heart.
The biggest mistake in general that I've made, and I'm trying to correct for that, is to put too much of a weighting on somebody's talent and not enough on their personality. And I've made that mistake several times. In fact, then I would say, oh, gee, I'm not going to make that mistake again. And then I would make it again. And I think it actually matters whether somebody has a good heart. It really does. And I've made the mistake of thinking that sometimes it's just about.
So that's Elon Musk years ago, and I think it's consistent that one thing that, and remember, he was somebody the left loved him, because he cares about the planet. He cares about energy efficiency and the cleanest forms of energy, right? And stood in line to meet then President Obama. Oh my goodness, the media loved him. He was a darling of the media. But God forbid, the minute that he stood on a stage and supported Donald J. Trump and said that Trump is good, rut-row, then they were doing exposés on his alleged drug use, which is all craziness. Right, you see a very different image. And that brings me to this theme of thinking about a good heart. The 13-year-old that we had gotten to know, DJ Daniel, 13-year-old honorary U.S. Secret Service agent living with brain and spinal cancer. Remember him? And he had met with President Trump, DJ's father, Mr. Daniel, sharing the health update now about DJ Daniel, 13-year-old. Now we know that he has been diagnosed with 3 new tumors, and talking about how rough this is. He's petite for his age. As a small child, he had been given just months to live, and a real miracle story. And so listen to his secret as he talks about how he remains positive. Let's hear from DJ Daniel.
If you got cancer, don't give up on life. All you got to do is pray, believe in God, and just keep that negative energy out of your mind.
Keep that negative energy out and pray. Turn to prayer. What a beautiful young man. And so In our family, my sister-in-law, Kathleen Logan, many of you know Kathleen, she has been diagnosed with lung cancer. Not that she was ever a smoker in her life, but diagnosed with lung cancer. If you know Logan Funeral Homes, maybe it was because they lived above, I don't know, as you know, sometimes maybe chemicals that they used. I have no idea, but she was diagnosed recently with lung cancer. So we had said, my husband, Larry, this is his sister, and he had said, well, Kathleen, can we tell people? And Kathleen said, yes, go ahead and tell people, because that means more people will pray for me. Oh, so please say a prayer. We're going to get all verklempt, but please say a prayer for DJ and my sister-in-law, Kathleen. All right, with that, take a quick break, say a prayer. Around the corner, we're going to hear from, actually, our policy expert, Andre Beliveau. He's going to tell you why are your electric rates going up? Thanks for being here today. Be right back. So much happening today, breaking locally, nationally. By the way, what's going on with Tesla in Jersey? And is this a politically driven situation? We'll get to that. Andre Beliveau, we'll talk to him, our great policy expert, about your energy pricing. And as we await more information locally and nationally, I should say, a lot of local reaction to the situation that they're calling an act of terrorism in Colorado, as many around the nation react to the fact that an 88-year-old Holocaust survivor is among those who was attacked with a guy with some kind of a flame blower device that was attacking Jews in Colorado. We have government officials sounding off on that one, with 8 people hospitalized, at least one of them in critical condition. But let's get to the story of what's going on here in Pennsylvania with, beginning today, I guess really it went into effect yesterday, these rate hikes. And you say to yourself, oh no, what? Why would the PUC allow this, where we already pay an estimated 45% higher than the rest of the nation for our electric rates? PECO rates going up 12.6%, PPL electric customers 16% hike, and MetEd hiking prices by about 8%. We thought it'd be a good idea to talk to our friend, Andre. Hey, Andre, how are you today? We want to know what's going on with these electric rates going up. Why?
Yeah, hey, Dawn. Good morning. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, Pennsylvania is an energy powerhouse. So, you know, why shouldn't Pennsylvanians be paying more money? It's ridiculous, right? It is such a preventable own goal that really that the heart of the problem rests with bad state policy and with, all show and no real action from Governor Shapiro. So as you said in the lead in here, you know, you're looking around, you know, 12, little over 12% for PECO customers. The rates are going to be going up for, depending on who your utility is, various amounts. But Pennsylvanians already pay well above the national average. These increases are not only impactful across, you know, directly to ratepayers, but for the entire economy, and they're preventable. So let's talk about the few big reasons why this is happening. If you Google right now and say, you know, PA rate hikes, you know, the little AI overview you get at the top will give you this litany of reasons. You know, it'll say something like, because the price of the fluctuating prices of natural gas are going up. So the question then becomes, okay, well, why is that happening? You know, and then it'll say something like, PJM, increasing, you know, because of rising capacity costs. Mm-hmm. Well, what's causing that? You know, it'll say, you know, something about, you know, infrastructure costs. Okay, but what is the root cause of all of those things? And the truth of the matter is we have a policy in Pennsylvania called the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard. And essentially what that is a mandate for public utilities to take a certain percentage from unreliable weather-dependent energy sources like wind and solar. And mind you, they have to charge you for these percentages in the AEPS, whether those energy sources are actually providing energy to you or not. Simply the amount of installed capacity of those things, whether they're actually connected to the grid or not, they have to charge you with it. So that policy, the AEPS, is the number one reason that Pennsylvanians have above average electricity costs. And then, of course, you know, things like the IRA subsidies from the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, the green energy subsidies there have absolutely flooded our energy markets with subsidies for unreliable energy that has distorted price signals, you know, and that has also forced, by the way, the early retirement of reliable power plants. You know, Pennsylvania only this year is seeing the construction of a new natural gas plant since Reggie's come on the scene back, you know, in 2015, 2016. Coal plants are being closed across the region, all in the name of arbitrary climate goals and all in the name of delivering, you know, subsidized green energy scheme to the wind and solar industry. And Governor Shapiro, not only is he doing nothing to really stop this, you know, he says his answer was price signals and price, you know, or price caps rather with PJM, which distorts price signals. So, you know, like, oh, that's great. Let's fix Marxist policies with more Marxist central planning schemes. That seems to be Governor Shapiro's answer there. Instead of working with the legislature to get rid of the AEPS, to, you know, get rid of all of these things already in law that increasing taxes. But no, not only is he not doing that, but he has his own policies that he's putting forward that, you know, you think 12.6% of an increase. Governor Shapiro's policies would raise your electricity rates by 60%. That means household bills would more than double, because that's the per kilowatt hour electricity rate of 60%. That means a 102% increase in your electric bills if Governor Shapiro gets his way. We have a new analysis out on the Commonwealth Foundation website on his PACER and PRESS proposals. You can read that. We break it down. Yeah. So it is, you know, if you think it's painful now, if Governor Shapiro gets his way, it's going to be even more painful, Dawn.
So Andre Belliveau, I mean, you're senior manager of energy policy, among other things, at the Commonwealth Foundation. You've advised, I know you've been brought in, I believe it was North Carolina, you had said in the past, where you were brought in as a policy advisor, bipartisan, because I think it's one of those things, can't we all agree upon that? So if you were, let's just say that Governor Shapiro, and in a bipartisan way here in Pennsylvania, they would all listen to your advice. What can we do, or is it too late, I guess, but what could turn this around and lower our rates?
Absolutely. So the first thing that we have to do is repeal the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard, or the AEPS, in law. That is the mandate that came into law in the early 2000s that requires it's government picking winners and losers, and it's picking winners who would not exist in a true free market or with a level playing field. So that is the mandate that requires public utilities to charge a certain percentage and then attempt to install a certain percentage of wind and solar onto the grid. And, you know, we've done some internal analysis on that. We're going to have some reports coming out from the Commonwealth Foundation next couple months to show how AEPS compliance costs have gone up over the last several years, like 600, like they've gone up 600 times what they were just a few years ago. So that is the number one culprit for increased energy costs in Pennsylvania. So number one, repeal the AEPS. Number two, I mean, it's really time for the Commonwealth to take control of its energy grid. Like, sure, we have PJM, who's our grid operator, but we, you know, we still have a PUC whose job is supposed to protect ratepayers from these things. And then we have the General Assembly, who is in charge of energy policy and should be passing these things. So repeal the AEPS, number one, first and foremost. Number two, we need to have a reliability standard in law that is energy source neutral, does not pick winners and losers, and simply says, look, any generation changes, anything you're going to do to change the grid has to maintain or improve reliability, because a reliable grid is an affordable grid, and you have to have measures and safety measures in there for least cost generation planning. I mean, this is common sense. Ratepayers and consumers of energy should be getting the most reliable, least cost option. And those two ways would be pretty critical first steps in helping not only lower electricity prices, but also make sure that we prevent, you know, a future that has, you know, rolling blackouts and power outages.
And I did see over the weekend, there's this announcement that the U.S. Department of Energy issued an emergency order. I have no idea what this is. A 202C emergency order to safeguard the electric grid reliability in the PJM interconnect. I'm literally regurgitating a headline. It's actually a press release that they've released under energy.gov. And so all I know, all I can tell you is every movie that's about like an apocalypse, it's an attack on the grid. So, you know, what are they doing here and why does this matter for national security, not to mention just lowering our energy costs?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, and the PJM in particular, you have to remember, it's not just Pennsylvania, it's the surrounding region. I mean, PJM includes, you know, Pennsylvania, it includes Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, and the District of Columbia, where all of the federal government infrastructure is. So, I mean, if the PJM grid collapses, you're talking about a major grid collapse in the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast in critical states, including the federal capital. So this is bad news. And PJM has been sounding the alarm to their credit, saying like, hey, like we are going to be, we're leading towards a grid reliability crisis if we don't do anything about that. And really, yeah, you're right. Energy is national security, but our national security threat to our grids right now is not coming from some foreign entity. It's coming from, we're doing this to ourselves. This has been 4 years of climate alarmism policy that has not been actually focused on, you know, examining the trade-offs. Of course, we all want clean air. Of course, we all want clean water. We want to responsibly conserve our natural environment, but we shouldn't be shooting ourselves in the foot in the process. And the truth is, instead of examining trade-offs and saying what is the actual economic impact, what is the actual impact on the science of the energy grid, you know, we should trust the science here. You can have all the luxury beliefs that you want, but at the end of the day, physics is going to win the day. You have to keep the grid humming. The grid has to have inertia to keep electrons moving through. And if you have an energy system that is not, that doesn't have, you know, spinning turbines like you do in a coal plant, a nuclear plant, or a gas plant, and you have a weather, you know, a weather-based system that is totally dependent on whether the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, this just does not make, you know, I mean, this is just basic common sense, Dawn. So we have these serious economic and indeed national security issues, but they're the result of 4 years of bad policy, but even more than that. And you know, also we talked about what we can do. I mean, right now at the federal level, we have the big, beautiful bill, which if the House gets its way, you know, the House Republicans and Congress did an excellent job of, you know, getting most of the way there with cutting out, you know, some of the subsidies for these unreliable energy systems. You know, I'm getting a little bit of heartburn from what I'm hearing from, you know, some, you know, conservatives and Republicans in the Senate who want to keep some of these things alive. But, you know, so we've talked about what to do at the state level, but at the federal level, the biggest barrier that we have to reliable and affordable energy are the green energy subsidies and mandates in the Inflation Reduction Act, which need to be full repeal in the big, beautiful bill if we are serious in saving the grid and saving ratepayers from paying astronomically and insane and arbitrary prices in the future.
And so, Andre, just so I have it straight, I mean, this is this emergency order that's just coming down is with U.S. Secretary of Energy Chris Wright. And just correct me if I'm, because I'm just trying to make sure that I have this right. What they're saying is that PJM, they had announced these retirements. So at this point, It looks like this emergency order means that the Eddystone Pennsylvania Generation Station, it's going to go past the planned retirement. Is that's what I'm inferring from this whole thing, that they're going to work with Constellation Energy. And they're saying that it's an emergency order that would allow the Eddystone generating station to go beyond the retirement. Is that, am I looking at that correctly?
That's right, Dawn. I mean, that's what they're going to have to do. Okay. And I mean, the Secretary of Energy statutorily has a lot of authority. There's a lot to engage in when we're seeing, essentially what we're seeing right now is with these early retirements and these capacity shortfalls. There's a lot of us who have argued that some of the executive orders early on this year that President Trump did with the national energy emergency can do a lot for the federal government to intervene to stop the closure of these reliable coal plants to keep them online and nuclear as well. You know, we should be renewing these the licenses for these nuclear plants, which provide reliable power. We have to have addition onto the grid. We have a time where we have an increase of energy demand, but that time of increased energy demand is coming from a time where we're, again, through arbitrary means by the force of a progressive government taking away energy capacity from the grid. That just doesn't make sense. That's like saying, okay, I need more gas in my car, but not only am I not going to fill it up, but we're going to start taking gas pumps away so you can't fill up your car. That makes no sense. This is absolutely right. I think it is right for the Department of Energy and Secretary Chris Wright to be working with power generators to keep their plants online so that we can build up capacity. It takes a long time to build more reliable power plants, so we certainly need the time. We need to engage in the amount of permitting reform and regulatory reform that will allow these projects to be built at a reasonable time and even an expedited time. It should not take years and years and years to build a new natural gas plant or a nuclear plant, which sometimes takes well over a decade and a half. That's ridiculous. This is the United States of America. We should be able to be doing this and doing it well and doing it better than other people do. We do this in so many other sectors. So we have a regulatory problem. We have a policy problem. These are all things that we can fix if everyone will be willing to work together and say, look, we need reliable power. No reasonable person should disagree with that. We need that reliable power to be affordable. Let's get together and work on this. And this should be a bipartisan effort. When I worked in North Carolina, we had a Republican legislature that worked with the Democratic governor to pass bipartisan legislation to do just that. There's no reason that Governor Shapiro should not be working with the General Assembly in both chambers, that both chambers should be coming together to work on state policy. And there's absolutely no reason why House Republicans in Congress should be battling against Senate Republicans at the federal level to try and get this big, beautiful bill across, which, if done correctly, has the potential to provide Americans with a reliable and affordable power. And in the meantime, you have Secretary Chris Wright doing what he can statutorily to try to keep, the lights mm-hmm. on.
Andre Beliveau, Commonwealth Foundation Senior Manager of Energy Policy. Thank you so much, as always. Until next time, thank you, Andre. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Dawn.
Absolutely.
Yo, Langhorne. Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
So the latest that we have, by the way, with this terrorism, an act of terror, as the FBI and DHS is calling it, the man who shouted Free Palestine and used a makeshift flamethrower to attack people who were marching in support of those Israeli hostages. This happened in Colorado over the weekend, happened yesterday. He is now facing two counts of first degree murder. This from the latest from authorities there in Colorado. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office saying on its daily booking sheet that 45-year-old Mohammed Sabri Solomon of El Paso County, Colorado, is charged with two counts of first-degree murder, one with extreme indifference and one listed as deliberation with intent. So Solomon also faces being charged with one count of attempted murder, one count of first-degree assault, and one count of causing serious injury to an at-risk adult or someone over the age of 70, and one count of using explosives or incendiary devices. They're calling this an act of terrorism, not what CNN was calling it initially, but just a tragedy unfolding in America as we get new information with what they're calling a horrifying attack. FBI Director Kash Patel, among others, putting the word out that this is a targeted terror attack on these individuals, as four men, four women injured between the ages of 52 to 88 years old, including an elderly lady who was a Holocaust survivor. Oh, my goodness. As we learn the new details of that situation. Just an American tragedy, and it's also a tragedy, quite frankly, the way the media wastes our time just really jumping through hoops, basically doing acrobatics to not say what this is, by somebody in this country illegally, according to the authorities, and unleashing this hatred on American citizens. Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry this is happening on this beautiful Monday. But we'll continue to follow the story as the charges continue.
Do you happen to hear what a Nadler said today, Dawn?
No, let's hear.
Yeah, you want to hear it?
This is Jerry.
Gerald Nadler on CNN. Yeah.
Congressman, you're the most senior Jewish member of the House, one of the longest serving Jewish members in the House. What is your reaction to what is we're now learning played out and has happened in Boulder?
Well, it was an obviously anti-Semitic attack and the latest in a series of anti-Semitic attacks. We had that attack on that couple exiting the Jewish community center in Washington a couple of weeks ago. And before that, on Passover, the firebombing or rather the attack on Governor Shapiro, a Jewish governor's home in Pennsylvania. And this is the latest in a series of attacks, and the Jewish community is very on edge, and we want the federal government to do more, and we'd like to see an increase in the budget for the protection for the protection provisions of the law, because when someone talks about Israel and attacks Jewish institutions or Jewish people, that's clearly anti-Semitism.
This you talked about the shooting in D.C., the murder in D.C. This, the pace and the brazen nature of these attacks, it's just getting worse. And while I've heard and I hear from you and I've heard from so many others, like something needs to be done. What needs to be done other than raising awareness, speaking out against it, obviously calling it out, holding them accountable to the fullest extent of the law? What are you looking for?
Well, the only other thing we can look for, really, aside from it would be nice if the president spoke out against this anti-Semitism.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? As if the president has never done that? Give me a break, Jerry. It's ridiculous. Well, joining us now, we do have a Menti Monday moment with my better half, Larry Menti. Hey, Lair Bear.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I'm so glad. I thought Jerry Nadler died. I'm so glad to find out that he's still alive. I haven't heard from him in a long, long time.
That's true.
He's about half the size.
Yeah, he disappeared all of a sudden. He just the Democrats really pushed him away, and he must have been thrilled to get a call from CNN.
Yeah, they couldn't get anybody else. And so, you know, what do you make of this situation as, you know, at least he acknowledges it's clearly anti-Semitic, but for him to call on President Trump, what a joke.
Yeah, and it's weird that nobody uses the word terrorism except for the White House. They said it right away that this is a terrorist attack. And I understand why the local officials didn't call it that, because it's a federal charge. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to be charged with the terrorist act. And the weird way that the media, and you pointed this out a second ago, I mean, is anybody illegal in this country? I don't understand why these crimes happen, except if you're protecting the Democratic Party and you're protecting Joe Biden. That's really the only way to ignore that fact. And it's a fact. He overstayed his work visa. He was illegal. He didn't report that. And so there's no question he was up for deportation and did this. But they want to protect that narrative. They want to make sure that both Joe Biden doesn't look bad and that they win the next election coming up.
Yeah, and so they've released the mugshot now of this guy and taken no responsibility for the fact that had he been deported, and how many times do we say this over and over, had he been properly and legally deported, which he should have been, then he wouldn't have been here to unleash this hell on the community.
And Boulder, Colorado, of course, is a sanctuary city. So it is maddening. And I don't understand the Democratic Party. It is so clear that nobody likes their policies. It's so clear that nobody likes what they're doing, and yet they spend $20 million on a study to find out why men aren't voting for them. Guess what? Everybody's not voting for you. It's not just men. No, I mean, it really is true. You go through all the statistics. You know, they lost the Hispanics. They lost a lot of the black vote. Everybody, go down the list of people that used to be Democrat, independents. Go down the list. Nobody was voting for you. It has nothing to do with the way you speak to men. It has to do with the fact that nobody likes your policies. Of course you've got a problem. That, by the way, yes. If I can change the subject for 1 second, yes. That study on men is the funniest thing
yes.
I have ever seen. It's like men are a tribe in the Serengeti, and they're trying to figure them out and connect with them and learn how to talk to them. If you read this study, it is incredible how they talk around the real problem. And the problem is the fact that for years you said men were toxic. You said they were sexist. You prevented them from getting jobs they were qualified for because of DEI hiring. Of course they're not going to vote for you. And it doesn't matter if you show up in their so-called quote-unquote spaces, you know, in the video games and the sports bars and the gym. By the way, speaking of which, if I were to say that the only way to reach women is to go to the beauty parlor and the makeup counter,
yeah.
That would be sexist.
Yeah, that's a
but
good
for
point.
For men, okay. Yeah, for men, it's fine to do that. It is. It shows you how lost they are, and I hope they keep doing this. I hope they keep thinking it's everything else but changing their policy, because they're in for a smackdown again in the midterms.
And didn't you tell me that they had a bit of a, I don't know, what did they have in California? They had kind of a convention. They were trying to attract men, and you were critical of the menu?
What? Yeah, that was actually from Bill Maher, but it is funny. So they were having this to hear what, you know, the consultants were coming in that's going to get $20 million. And by the way, if you read this brochure they put out, you can't make heads or tails of it. It's like written in another language. And they just talk around what the problem is. But they stayed at the Ritz-Carlton in the most expensive part of San Francisco, High Point. And they had, like, for instance, for dinner, they had, like, lobster rolls. You know, if you want, here's your problem. You're, of course, you're not connecting with men. And also, by the way, in this report, it said that one of the ways to reach men, of course, is video games, and that they wanted to put ads in video games. If you want to really tick off young men, put ads in their video games.
Yeah. Well said. Well, you mentioned Bill Maher, so let's listen in. Bill Maher did comment on the situation.
Seriously, okay. This is a serious problem for Democrats. Less than 1 in 4 Democrats under 30 say they're proud to be an American. 54% say they're embarrassed by it. Embarrassed? Like America's your mom picking you up at school? You're embarrassed to be an American? Well, guess what? The feeling's mutual. Because you have no perspective. Is America perfect? No, of course not. No country is. Although, don't get Tucker Carlson started on Russia.
Uh-oh.
Globalize the intifada is the catchphrase that's really catching on these days, as if worldwide suicide bombing and cosplaying Islamic revolutionaries is the answer to our problems. At an AOC Bernie Sanders rally in Idaho last month, someone threw a Palestinian flag over an American flag, and the crowd erupted in approval. What should have happened after that is one of the adults on stage should have told their young loyal followers, this is not a symbol of freedom. This is.
Show the American flag. Larry Menti, your reaction to Bill Maher after the... the Dem donors are considering this $20 million strategic plan called Speaking with American Men. Sam.
How about Bill Maher? When the Democratic Party loses Bill Maher, they are in trouble. And it's so many people who were formerly liberals because they were old school liberals. They made sense. It was common sense. You had a disagreement with them, but they weren't. They're not for this DEI policies. They're not for transgender rights. You know that. So many of the, they're not for opening the border and letting everybody in. They're not for defunding the police. They can join the rest of us. They can join conservatives in saying, that's crazy. And the fact that now the Democratic Party is supposedly doing this introspection, and they figured out it's the language they're using, means they're going to be lost in the wilderness for a long, long time. Because until a moderate takes over the party, until a Josh Shapiro or a Wes Moore or someone like that takes over the party, they're going to be lost. But I don't think that's going to happen. The most popular person in the Democratic Party right now is AOC, and she's downright crazy. So, and also, she is. She's not only crazy, but she's a dangerous combination. She's stupid crazy. I mean, to have both of those going for you at the same time makes you a leader in the Democratic Party, apparently, these days.
Who do you worry about? You know, when you say that they're searching and they're soul searching and kind of floundering, who's out there? You mentioned Westmore, you mentioned Shapiro. Who do you, Bashir, who do you worry about?
Westmore. And I don't think, as you said, he's announced he's not going to run. That means nothing. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden he's going to say, so many people came to me and so many people said, we need you. And how could I turn down my country? I mean, people get out of that all of the time. But Wes Moore is really impressive. He's very, very impressive. I read his book, The Other Wes Moore, where he won a Pulitzer for, where he went out and found another Wes Moore that didn't have a father that's now in jail. And he wrote about both their lives and how important it is to have a father in your life. Now, that's not a liberal policy. You know, that is something that comes from the streets. And, you know, Wes Moore is controversial for saying that. He didn't care. And he won a Pulitzer. You know, I think he handled the bridge collapse extremely well. And he's very impressive. And so, of all of the candidates, and he's an African-American, of course, and so of all of the candidates for the Democratic Party, he's the one that would scare me the most. But I don't. Maybe he's telling the truth. I mean, maybe he's not going to run. That would be a gift, not only to Josh Shapiro, but to the country, to the Republican Party, not necessarily the country, but the Republican Party.
Yeah, I just, you know, I wonder why he made a point so early on to say, I'm not running. And so maybe he's not, but maybe they'll beg him to run. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's a different kind of guy. You know what I mean? Maybe he doesn't want that job. Maybe he doesn't want the headache of it. Who knows? I don't know why, but I think the Republican Party should be thanking their lucky stars because he is really impressive. He's very impressive. And I think that I don't see many candidates out there for the Democrats that aren't going to be easy to beat, but he's one that would at least give, you know, J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio, whoever it turns out to be, a run for their money.
When you look at New Jersey, we've got, you know, June 10th, obviously a big primary coming up, a primary election, the Jersey governor, which many say Jersey's a swing state in play. What do you see happening in New Jersey with especially the governor's race?
Well, for much of the stuff we just talked about, I think Jack Chiarelli is going to be the next governor of New Jersey. Look, we've seen the numbers in New Jersey going Republican. We've seen them, the Republicans gaining major ground in registration. We know how close Jack Chiarelli came last time, and that was against an incumbent. And I don't see anybody, you know, we talk about all the time how they made Mikey Sherrill in a lab, but she has been less than impressive in these debates.
Yeah.
And she and Gottheimer, especially Gottheimer, are the moderates. Well, I guess Steve Sweeney too, but they're having a difficult time because they have to win the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw the debate when they were talking about sanctuary cities, And for the Josh Gottlieb, they asked people to raise their hands if they are for sanctuary cities. And Gottheimer and Mikey Sherrill didn't raise their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're trying to backtrack. We were talking about this a second ago, from the Democratic policies that are toxic and that nobody likes except other Democrats. But that could hurt them both in the primary. I mean, because I, you know who, and I was surprised at the polls to not see him rise more. Ross Baraka. Yeah, you know, Ross Baraka in the nutty Democratic Party. And by the way, I've always thought he's impressive, but, you know, he went out and pulled that stunt at the ICE facility. And I think most Democrats liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, it got him a lot of notoriety. And I don't think everybody knew who Ross Baraka was. They all know now. I would not be surprised if he ends up winning. And that would be a gift to Cinerelli.
Yes.
Because he is almost radical.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm just looking up. The problem is there are not a ton of polls. You know, Baraka is claiming there's an internal poll that he's in a statistical dead heat with Mikey Sherrill. So I saw that headline, but I don't see a ton of polls being done. But I do, when I look at the headlines, Larry, to your point, I just see Ross Baraka all over the headlines. He gets all of the media play because he's a media darling.
Right, and the black vote is huge in the mm-hmm. Democratic Party. He is a black man running, and they come home to roost. I mean, you've seen it in other elections where all of a sudden all these black voters are out there and voting for the black candidate. So in a field where nobody's getting like over 17 or 18%, to have that going for you and all the notoriety recently, mm-hmm. I would not be stunned at all if Ross Baraka doesn't win this.
Mm. Yeah, and yeah. I think you're right, though. I think that given those choices, a far-left progressive versus somebody who New Jerseyans view as a more moderate person, you know, I think that you're right. It would be an advantage for the Republicans, no matter who's the Republican. You know what I mean? I think at that point, the Republican candidate would have the better chance, just based on, you know, what you're saying.
Yeah, and Cinerelli has become, he was a good candidate last time. Mm-hmm. He's become a better candidate. He is buttoned down. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been running now for, what, 9 years for this job? And he's got it down. You interviewed him. I heard the interview that you did with him. Mm-hmm. He's got it down. First of all, I think he's going to blow away everybody in this primary, in the Republican primary. And that's going to give him a step forward. And anything can happen in an off-year election. And the whole country is going to be putting money into this race, and they're going to be watching this race because it's a bellwether of what to come. So expect the Republicans. They know they have a chance here. And expect the Republicans to put a lot of money into this. I really believe at this point it's Jack Cinerelli's to lose. And that's kind of amazing when you talk about a Democratic state, a traditionally Democratic state like New Jersey.
Oh, well said, Larry Mentee. Well, thank you very much. Happy Monday.
Oh, happy Monday to you. See you at home. And by the way, thanks for giving me this thing, the crud that you had up. I'm now starting to get, so I appreciate
Uh-oh.
That. I know.
A little.
I
know. Well, everybody's had it, this weird, like, cough. I don't know. Somebody thought it might be COVID.
Oh, no.
Oh, thanks.
I know.
Thanks for putting that in my
Sorry, head. Honey.
Now that you're over now that you're over it and you kept saying, I don't have COVID, now that it's been passed on, now it's COVID. Okay.
I'm not a doctor. I don't
Monday
know.
Monday morning quarterbacking coronavirus.
I know.
It's great.
Sorry, honey. We thought it was allergies. We Dan and I were talking about it. Everybody had it lasts like for a month. I don't know what it is. But
maybe it's environmental.
For a
though.
Month.
I know.
Yeah, it's environmental.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, honey.
Yeah. Yeah, but you said you're not a doctor. You play a doctor at home.
I know. I'm always like, it's COVID. It's allergies.
I know.
Take your vitamins.
I know. And you diagnose people. Yep, and exactly that. You tell people what to take, and it. I hate to break it to you, honey, but it never works.
Can't hurt. Might help. All right, Lair Bear. Love you, honey.
All right, talk to you later. I love you. See you, Dan. Bye-bye.
There he is. I don't know.
Did you just say he loves me?
Yeah. I said I love you.
Much love to you, too, Larry.
Much love. Even Dan loves Larry Bear. We have to take a break. 855-839-1210. If you want to call in, if you have a take on the New Jersey. I mean, we don't live in New Jersey. Dan, you live in New Jersey. I don't know if you had any comment on that. I just think at this point, if it's Ross Baraka, I agree with him no matter who gets it on the Republican side, but especially somebody who is well-known, you know, who's a well-known individual. I think it's a win for the Republican candidate.
I mean, what a move storming that ICE facility was, huh? I had no idea who this person was before that.
Yeah. You're right, though. It was a good publicity stunt.
Yeah.
True. 855-839-1210. We'll take a quick break. Be right back. By the way, one of the headlines with ICE is that they have conducted one of the largest immigration enforcement operations yet. In this one, Operation Patriot had resulted, and this is a breaking news story today, resulted in ICE and federal partners arresting 1,461 illegals. This is in the greater Boston area. And they released the statistics from law enforcement. This just within the past hour, they say nearly 800 had criminal convictions or criminal charges. And so this is a huge ICE operation. You know, we continue to talk about the fact that, you know, this jurisdiction of who is a sanctuary city or a sanctuary county. One county that I want you to just keep your eye on, and that's Chester County. There are different Facebook pages that I follow, specifically on Facebook for whatever reason, and they're saying that ICE is pretty active in and around Chester County. So I'll just point that out to you as they've reported different operations there. But nothing like we're seeing in Massachusetts, in Boston. If you think about that, nearly 800 of these individuals, these are, you know, either criminal convicted, charged and wanted individuals, but 1,461. And so this is, you know, when you look at these individuals, then you hear about the charges, the allegations, that these are not the mommies and daddies and babies that we heard about. No, that's not what this is. This is called Operation Patriot, and they are cracking down on criminals who are here illegally. It's very popular in the polls, as Trump calls it, an 80-20 issue. So we've got that one going on, which is nice. Whew. What other audio did we not get to today, Dan Borowski? We had so much audio today. I think we got to a lot of it. What was J.D. Vance? I know Trump and J.D. Vance, what do you think they have for lunch? They're having lunch together. What do you think they're having for lunch?
You think they're eating Italian?
I don't know.
No, yeah. Yes, he had this to say.
Thank you, Prime Minister Maloney, who's become a good friend of mine. And I know I speak for the president when I say we're both big fans of yours and, of course, of Italy. The people of Italy have been most gracious, especially today, which was a beautiful ceremony. I think one of the things that Prime Minister Maloney has offered to do, and, of course, the president and I are excited to accept, is really to be a bridge builder, I think, in some ways, between Europe and the United States. I've said repeatedly that I think, you know, Europe is an important ally of the United States. The individual countries within Europe are important allies of the United States. But, of course, we have some disagreements, as friends sometimes do, on issues like trade. And we also have many agreements and many things that we can work on together. And I'm looking forward to this conversation. So I appreciate Prime Minister Maloney's hospitality. I appreciate Commissioner von der Leyen being here and being willing to engage in this conversation.
And so we know that the vice president and the president are having lunch today, meeting today, one of the big meetings, as we know, the J.D. Vance's meeting with President Trump over a lunch date. I don't know why that was on the schedule. I didn't see much else from that. But there was another, this is MSNBC, J.D. Vance botches the defense of the MAGA brain drain that Trump has caused in academia. That's the MSNBC, just to give the alt view of what MSNBC is headlining with. they say the vice president's response to concerns about scientists abandoning the U.S. amid the administration's anti-science agenda was detached from reality. I will tell you that given MSNBC's ratings, they are the ones detached from reality, not the vice president, who's always well-spoken. So I just have to laugh out loud at MSNBC. We just see every other week we're talking about their declining ratings, but they're saying that he's detached from reality. Yeah, what a joke.
Can I tell you an awesome story that happened over the weekend?
What happened?
This is in the world of sports.
Yes.
So a kid by the name of Cole Young, he was a pick 2022 of the Seattle Mariners, young guy, Dawn, 21, from Pittsburgh area. And he had a moment on his minor league team. So we're just going to play almost like a Rudy story. So I want to play back the moment, Dawn, where over the weekend, this is a couple days ago, he's told by his minor league coach that he's going to be called up to the majors. And just a source of pride on this kid's eyes. Take a look, watch.
I meant to tell you this earlier, but I'm really proud of what you've done, how far you've come. Just take that to Seattle tomorrow, okay?
Where?
Seattle.
Right.
Tomorrow. So you're done. You're not playing anymore this game. You're going to go play for Seattle. All right? Congratulations.
Covers his eyes. Choked up. Gives him a hug.
It's just a beautiful moment where his minor league coach tells him, and you as a mother with sons, I know you love when young men get their, comeuppance. And the next day, Dawn, he goes to the Seattle Mariners, and it's the 12th inning, and he comes up the bat and take a watch.
And now the winning run is at third with one out. Cole Young today making his major league debut, one of the top prospects in baseball, at the plate, the bottom of the 11th inning, a chance to win it for the Mariners. Sands comes set. The pitch. Swinging a ground ball, bouncing softly to the first base throw. Oh, not in time! It's a
and they win.
For the Mariners. Cole Young in his major league debut is showered with seeds and gum, and the water bucket is showered.
So just one of those moments, Dawn, that
beautiful.
Bring sports and the young men succeeding together with someone from Pittsburgh. I know it's not the Phillies, I know it's the Mariners, but just love to see it.
Well, maybe Cole Young will end up playing for the Phils. That'd be pretty cool. But I love to see, he's a rookie. He gets the ice bucket over the head. Rookie makes his MLB debut, and they're saying he was the right man for the job. I love those stories. I do. Aw, Cole.
Now, on the other side, you see Greta Thunberg has made some news. A young woman.
Greta Thunberg.
Yes.
Aww.
She's going to be joining some other individuals as they set sail to Gaza in hopes to, do some international relations to smooth things over. Take a listen. Where's my sound?
This is Greta Thunberg.
We are setting sail today about a month after our latest attempt to go on with this mission. The boat was bombed twice. All evidence suggests Israel. And we are doing this because we have to keep our promise to the Palestinians to do everything in our power to protest against the genocide and to try to open up the humanitarian corridor and break the siege. And we are doing this because we are against.
Like, why does it always seem like she's on the wrong side of history, Dawn?
I know.
Yeah.
Poor Greta.
She seems well-placed, right?
By the way, our beautiful FLOTUS, our first lady, talked about it's National Foster Care Month and the White House welcoming foster and adoptive families for tours and a viewing of the president's Marine One departure on the South Lawn. So just wanted to mention our first lady as well. Let's get to Dom Giordano for a big show today. Happy Monday, Dom.
Well, same to you, Dawn. Yeah, I see a star in the making. This woman, Julie Hamill, that I booked, I saw on CNN toe-to-toe over the Hernandez matter, the transgender sports thing. And she shows really the tactic of how to deal with this. She talked about feeling sorry for the kid because he's being misguided. He's being told the wrong things.
It's a great Dom show just ahead.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.